tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 11th of September 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, today's episode is being pre-recorded because neither myself or Grandpa Dan can actually make it this Friday. So today we're going to be having another look at the Unknown Warriors book, which is a collection of opinion pieces. Nicholas Pringle is the author, and he basically asked people that had fought in World War II what they thought of modern Britain. And this was back in the time of Prime Minister Tony Blair. And their answers were very illuminating. Quite a majority of them thought that the place was terrible, and they were absolutely horrified at what had happened since the end of the Second World War. And in some places, they even said it would have been better if we hadn't even won the war, looking at what Britain is like today. So they're effectively pensioners at the time. Unfortunately, most of these people that gave these opinion pieces, they were probably no longer with us. The author took out adverts in national newspapers and asked people who had fought in the war to write back to him with their recollections and their opinions on modern Britain. So the first one today says, I am now 80 years old and I'm getting more frustrated with the path my country appears to be taking, i.e. an open door policy on immigration, asylum, etc. And I'll just pause there because it's exactly the same thing today, isn't it? We have even more immigration today and we have even more asylum seekers, and we even have people breaking in to the country across the English Channel. So nothing was being done about this then, which is 20 years ago, and nothing is still being done about it now. We're still being given these false promises by the politicians that they're going to solve the problem, do something about it. And this recollection here just shows you that they never do anything about this, and this has been a problem for decades now. To accommodate all these races and religions, the native Britons are being forced to tone our freedom of speech, our very way of life, and now our very identity is under threat by the new Labour. Political correctness, human rights, equal opportunities, racism, etc., etc. So what he is saying here, to tone our freedom of speech, it means our freedom of speech is being censored. And when he says our very identity is under threat, that is because we have people that are not even a part of our race, let alone part of a brother nation, claiming to be English, Welsh or Scottish, claiming to be British just because they happen to have a British passport. And that means that our very identity as British people, as one of the British ethnicities, is under threat because we have people of other ethnicities claiming our identity for their own. And we can't really blame these people for that because they're encouraged to do so by the government, effectively, and by our establishment, by our entire mainstream system, encourages these people from foreign backgrounds to identify as being British. And they say, oh, well, they're just as British as anyone else. And of course, they're not. All they have is a piece of paper saying that they're a citizen of Britain. They don't actually have any British ancestors. Our country was already overcrowded in 1946, with a population of 46 million, living on 94,000 square miles of land, with Vera Lynn's White Cliffs of Dover. If we could have seen in 1939 what this once proud and patriotic island would become in 2006, no one would have bothered to answer the call. Again, so this is one of these pieces that they're saying they actually regret going to war, looking at what it looks like today. It doesn't look like we won the war, does it? He says, we should all be ashamed that having fought two world wars to protect our island and our way of life, our freedom of speech, that our political leaders have lied to us. We now have a country that is a lawless, multicultural hellhole. And again, I'll just pause there. Because he's saying that the reason why the British fought the Second World War was to protect our way of life and our freedom of speech. Not to eliminate Nazism, not to promote democracy around the world, but to protect our freedom of speech and our way of life. Because people back then literally thought that Germany was going to invade our country and force us to all speak German. And that was how ludicrous it is. But back then we didn't have the internet, so we just had to rely on what the establishment told us. And of course, what the establishment was telling us was not entirely true. Our villages, towns and cities are crime and drug infested. Our immigrants have brought with them their own cultures of crime, drugs and guns, etc., and have no intention of adapting to the country and its way of life. What would our fallen comrades of two world wars have thought about that? Also, that there are over 3 million Asians probably occupying the homes they left never to return to. And of course, I mean, that feeds into this idea that we had to open up the borders to people from foreign countries, foreign nations, to rebuild the country. And effectively, what he's saying here is, well, they just brought these people in to replace the British people that were here before, which is, of course, this the Great Replacement, isn't it? So he's really talking about that then. He's saying they brought in Asians in order to replace the people that never returned after the war. What a stab in the back that must have felt like. I volunteered for the army at 17 years of age for come what may, the month before D-Day. With today's society, many youths of that age are mugging old ladies, kicking down doors and heads, are out of work, on drugs, fathering children, stealing cars, and costing the taxpayer millions. At the end of the war in Europe, we went to India and the northwest frontier Kashmir. It was during partition, when the new Pakistan was given half of the Indian Punjab, that the Muslims swept in, and so began the slaughter between Hindu, Sikh and Muslim, which cost millions of lives and was worse than Iraq or Rwanda, because no explosives or machine guns were used, just pure hatred of each other, using knives, swords, sticks, stones, fire and water. And remember, this is after the British left. The British were preventing this happening. The British Empire prevented this massacre that cost millions of lives, prevented it from happening. And the minute the British left India, this is what happened. Millions of people died, and yet we're told that the British Empire was a force for evil today, when it was preventing this. I mean, you get no better example of how good the British Empire was at preventing these sorts of things than this example of what happened immediately the moment the British left India. They were not averse to locking hundreds of men, women and children in buildings to be burned alive. We left on Independence Day, August 14th, 1947, to the Indian males on the dockside screaming, go home, go home. And these people have been allowed to settle here in the 1950s, uncontrolled, with no health checks or suitability to integrate, etc. Pakistanis, Hindus, with equal rights as ourselves and our welfare system, NHS, etc. This cannot be right. And again, that's an important point. The British government, the establishment, we could see what was going on in Pakistan and India. We could see that these people were just butchering each other, locking each other in houses and setting fire to them. And then our establishment thought, well, what a good idea it would be to bring these people into Britain. These people that have no concern about massacring millions of their own ethnic group. Why don't we bring them into Britain? That's not going to cause a problem, is it? And of course, it has caused a problem. I mean, there's nothing mentioned here about the rape, but there was a massive amount of rape that also went on at this time. And of course, now we have the problem with the grooming gangs, who are predominantly of Pakistani origin. I have been writing to my local MP for the last 6 or 7 years, warning of the dangers of our Asian immigrants, Muslims in particular. Since my first letter, we have had 9/11, Bali bombings, Spanish bombings, 7/7, with the ongoing promise there is more to come. How long before they give us a Beslan school siege? Yet no one gets deported. Our government lets them stay to rant and rave, as we witnessed 60-odd years ago. Please find cuttings and opinions of Nottingham, how it was in our day, compared to the lawless, drug-fueled, gun culture, multicultured hellhole of today. Now, in that sort of area today in Middlesbrough, we do have a lot of problems. And we have problems in areas that are predominantly white. We now have these sorts of problems with the white community. And the only reason why we have this problem now with the white community is because they've been brought up alongside other ethnic groups that behave like that. You're not going to raise the level of these other ethnic groups. What you're going to do is you're going to lower the level of our own people. If you put a troublemaker in a classroom of non-troublemakers, put a few of them in there, the non-troublemakers aren't suddenly going to stop causing trouble and settle down to work. What they're going to do is they're going to disrupt the work of the other people in the class, and the other people in the class eventually will end up behaving like them. There was a study that was actually done with bringing up a child alongside a chimpanzee. And instead of the chimpanzee becoming more like the child became more like the chimpanzee. And this is the problem. If you bring in people with a lower IQ and you put them with people with children of a higher IQ, the children of a higher IQ are going to end up behaving like the ones with a lower IQ. So this is the reason, or the reason I believe to be the reason, why we have these sorts of problems like we do today in Middlesbrough, among white communities. Almost all who married during the war years, unless they were lucky, would have had to live with their parents and bring up children in cramped conditions, no bathroom with an outside toilet, etc. Returning servicemen and women would not get a house of their own until the 1950s. I married in 1948 and had a 3- and 4-year-old in rooms. Rationing lasted until the early 50s, including having to be registered with a coal merchant for our fuel. We did look forward to the new world we were promised on the domestic front by our politicians, i.e. health service, social security, pensions, full-time regular work and cradle to the grave, no more pre-war industrial strife, etc., no more workhouse. But in 1946, uncontrolled immigration began by the Attlee government and carried on by the Conservatives. So this is how long it's been going on for, since the end of the war. I mean, people will say today, well, the immigration began under Tony Blair, and then it continued under the Conservatives, and now it's continuing under Labour. Well, this is when it began, was after the end of the war. That's what you have to look back to, really, to see where these problems that we have today, where they stem from. People from our foreign colonies, having emptied their countries of whites, now began to arrive here, having put nothing in, yet they were entitled to receive the same benefits and healthcare without medical checks, screening for their suitability to settle in our island. Immigration in one form or another, that we have now reached crisis point, that we, the native Britons, are now in danger of losing our identity. Just imagine what this man would feel if he looked around the country now, see that London is 60% non-British, and other cities as well. Everywhere, ordinary people are unhappy at what is going on around them. In some towns, English is the second or third language. The 4 native tribes of our island are in danger. I live in the hope that as I saw 250 years of the British working, living, fighting and dying, being born in the Indian subcontinent, ending in my 2 years from 1943 to 1947, that all our unwanted migration of about 60 races and religions settled here can be reversed in the same amount of time, i.e. 2 years. I can think of no other country in recent history, the Native Americans and Palestine excepted, who have allowed such immigration that their native population would become second-class citizens, the same as which is happening in our islands. And of course, America was the example. I mean, people looked over at America and they could see that the problems that America's having with the civil rights movement, problems that were occurring between black people and white people in America. And that should have been a warning that we should not import these peoples into our country, because the likelihood is we'll just end up with the same problems that America has. And yet our establishment just ignored the example of America and brought these people into our countries anyway. Let's have a look at the next letter here. I believe that this country is no longer that in which I was born and brought up. I too have considered emigrating, and but for my age of 85, would do so. And this after being as pro-British as is possible. I believe that the rate of immigration to this country has been grossly excessive, and we are no longer the homogenous race which brought us to such high prominence. Who is to blame? I think directly our politicians, who considered the short-term advantages, i.e. money, and ignored the long-term effects. Well, that sort of ignores the other people that are involved, the banks and the corporations. Our politicians are basically just frontmen. They're window dressing. They're the ones that explain the policies to us. They're the ones that are responsible for breaking the news to the public of what's next going to happen. But they all answer to the banks. I mean, even Liz Truss learnt that. She learnt that being Prime Minister, she really couldn't do that much, because any changes she made, the banks and the corporate institutions, they would make certain that if you made any changes that they don't like, that you would be kicked out of office. So she discovered that, and it's been like that for quite some time now. But back then, I guess, and today, I guess, people do blame the politicians when they're really just the front men. The next one here says, I do realise that in today's high cost of living economy, both partners need to earn, but I am saddened by the effect this has on the children. Many are unloved and undisciplined, uncared for, and to make up for this, given too much money. I am sure many parents feel guilty about the lack of time they spend with their children and get into debt, giving them such expensive presents. No wonder they grow up feeling that the world owes them a living. This was another issue. I mean, women today have been told that they were oppressed, and they were an oppressed people, and that men were oppressing them. But in actual fact, they didn't have to work. Men provided everything for them. All you needed was one man working, and he could provide enough for a wife and 10 children. I mean, some people had 12 children, 15 children, massive families. And the women never had to work. They just stayed at home and brought up the family, and they were happy. And now they're told they have to go out to work, but who's going to raise the children? Who's going to bring up the children? Well, they're just handed over to somebody who will do the job as cheaply as possible. And of course, then we have these horrific things that can happen to them when they're in childcare, when really they should be with their mother, being looked after by their mother. But because women were told that they were being oppressed, and that all they really wanted to do was work and be treated like men, it halved the wages. It halved the actual value of the wages. So now you need two people to go out and work instead of one person to go out and work. And you can't really blame the women, because it was a male establishment that allowed this to happen and gave women the vote and allowed them to work. It wasn't as if women basically took over our institutions. We just allowed this to happen. How have so many of today's young people become so rude, abusive, and downright violent towards the elderly and each other? Well, there's lots of reasons for that. Lots of reasons. The Bible says if you stay the rod, you will spoil the child, which effectively means that you should have physical punishment for wrongdoing. And left-wing people will point to studies and say, oh, yes, but this shows that this has a negative effect in adulthood. But if you listen to Dr. Edward Dutton, he says that those studies were flawed because they didn't account for mental health and mental health issues. And of course, if somebody with mental health issues beats their child, the child is likely just to have mental health issues because the parents had mental health issues. But if you control for mental health, then it has a more positive effect, because it teaches children's self-discipline. So when you actually remove the threat of physical punishment, you end up with children growing up and they don't have any self-discipline. They've never been forced to learn any self-discipline. And I think that's one of the reasons for this. Also, the fact that nobody trusts anybody else anymore. No, children think that they haven't got a future. They've been brought up in a multicultural system, which means that there's no sense of community and there's no sense of trust. As soon as you put another group there and the original group is no longer homogenous, that gives the potential for members of the original group to conspire with the other group against their own group for whatever benefits they think they're going to get. And that's at the heart of why there is a lack of trust in multicultural societies, not just a lack of trust of the people that don't speak the same language as you, but a lack of trust of the people that do speak the same language of you as you and are of the same ethnicity, because they may well be conspiring with this other group. If the other group is not there, then there isn't the chance for conspiracy to take place, and you instinctively trust one another more. At one time, discipline was the responsibility of family, society, and police. Now everyone is afraid of repercussions, as children know their rights. I thought their rights and responsibilities lay with the family. And of course, that's another thing the state has done. It's taken away the family's rights. It's taken away the parent's right to be the protector of the child and to decide what the child should be taught. And they force all children now to be propagandized with LGBTQ indoctrination. And particularly the trans issue is disturbing, because you can have cases where a teacher can decide that a child is transgender, socially transition them, i.e. refer to them as the opposite gender in school and present them as if they are the opposite gender, and then not tell the parents about it because they think the parents might be transphobic. So they've literally taken away this right of the parent to decide these things and to be the guardian of the child, and they've handed that over to teachers in schools. I mean, that's the case in Scotland. I don't know whether it's the case in England yet. It might well be the case in Wales. I can remember doing podcasts on it, these instructions saying that a child from as young as three might be transgender, and that if the teacher thinks the child is transgender but thinks the parents might not approve, they should socially transition the child in secret. Imagine that. You hand your children over to these schools and these teachers, and on the understanding that they would act in the best interests of the child, and they would not make a decision that is any different to the decision that you would make. And yet they've got this instruction telling them that they are to keep it secret from you if they socially transition the child. The church, once the backbone of society, in an effort to appear more liberal and with it, has abandoned the teachings of the Bible. The law is no longer looked upon as just. Teachers and doctors are not respected as they once were, and members of parliament are ridiculed. They have lost the respect of the population through spin and downright lying. And that's the point. The members of parliament may well be ridiculed now, but it's their own fault, isn't it? It's their own fault for deceiving the population and refusing to act upon the democratic will. The democratic will, such as that wants a stop to immigration, for instance. The next one here says, in the 50s, early 60s, children would lark about in the street, spend hours in the park, go on bus journeys with friends, stay overnight in each other's home, knock on your door asking, do you need anything from such and such a shop? They don't lark about these days. They are young thugs terrorizing the weak and the elderly. Young mothers, most of whom seem hardly old enough to be out of school, use their prams as battering rams. People are all too aware of their rights and reluctant to accept responsibility. Corruption and deceit are spreading down from the top in politics and industry. Our towns are not protected by patrolling policemen, but by cameras, which merely records the violence rather than prevents it. And that's a good point there. All the while that we had a religious faith and we had a belief in God, we had a belief in judgment, you could rely on people's consciences to do the right thing. Now they've taught people that God doesn't exist and you can just make up your own mind. Then there's no self-discipline, but there's no instinctive desire not to do the wrong thing. People don't think there's going to be a punishment before. Whereas years ago, people lived in fear of eternal damnation if they were to do the wrong thing. And now, because we don't have that anymore, we have to have cameras everywhere. We have to be recording people at all times. And if you think this was 20 years ago, and he's saying that the kids weren't outside playing, then think how much worse it is today with social media and with mobile phones and people playing these computer games instead of interacting socially and developing their own imagination. But youngsters' imagination is dictated to them by what they see on a screen. A constantly prying government has even turned road safety into a money-making venture. And that's a reference to speed cameras. Everyone in public service is there solely for the money. They want and take authority, but they don't want responsibility either. They want to take our hospitals, our roads, our schools, our churches and libraries. Post offices and police stations are shutting. We can add banks to that as well now, 20 years later. Leaving people to telephone helplines hundreds and thousands of miles away. Every year we pay more taxes and get considerably less in services. Nothing is as good as it was, and it all costs more. Selfishness takes priority. Our freedom and privacy are disappearing fast, all in the name of security, in which people are encouraged to be selfish, to think only of themselves. There is no community anymore. What a pity the agony of the age does not penetrate our minds in youth, facing us with the truth. I mean, these are really sensible things that these people are saying. And what are the youth taught? Well, they're taught that older people, they're all racists who voted for Brexit, and they don't know what they're talking about effectively, because it's been so long since they went to school. And yet when you actually look at what old people have to say, you can see the wisdom there of these years that they have lived. You think these are people that saw the horrors of war as well. And now they're just even more horrified than they were at the war, looking at what has happened after the war. Those with a grasp of history fail to see why experts pronounce that we were happier in the 1930s, a period associated with the so-called Depression, the rise of Nazism, and poor living standards. What they forget is that Britain back then had the basic requirements of a happy society, rules and decent values. There was a clear line between right and wrong, upheld not just by the rule of law, but by the schools, the church and strong families. The failed experiment of the past 40 years or so has washed such notions away. I think one thing that he's referring to there is social shaming for bad behaviour within the community was a good way to keep order. And he's also pointing out here that in the 1930s, when you had the rise of Nazism, supposedly this great evil, people were far happier than they actually are today. Another one here refers to that time. In those days, people were orderly, kept the laws of the country, were polite and courteous. Gentlemen raised their hats to greet one, stood up when a lady entered the room, offered one a seat, etc. Life was orderly. People in the main, apart from dialects, spoke the king's English. Everybody looked clean and wholesome, especially the females. We still didn't have much money, whatever, but we were contented and happy. People still whistled and sang. There was still England, our country, which we had fought for, our freedom, our democracy. Where is all of that now? This is an interesting point. You can tell that people were happier back then because they were whistling and singing all the time. I mean, how often do you see people walking along and whistling now? It's a crime, apparently, to whistle at a woman, make a wolf whistle. Apparently, that's misogyny now. So we've outlawed whistling. Churchill once said, "Beware the secret army." That is what has happened. I'm sure Blair stood for power solely to destroy England. We are not an area, we are a country, but it has been given away to foreigners who receive far more from this government than we, the veterans, receive. And it's the same today, isn't it, when they get put up in hotels. It is the same generation who fought for freedom, who are having to sell their homes for care, who are being refused medical services because incomers come first, who can only afford to exist just instead of enjoying the rest of their lives. And of course, what they will say there, they will say, well, people that have illegal immigrants that have come in, these refugees, they may not have had any health care in the countries that they've managed to come through. So they have a greater need. So they have to be seen first. And we see that happening in hospitals. They prioritize the homeless, and especially refugees, because they are considered to be homeless, but also because they're refugees. So they were being prioritized back then 20 years ago, and they're still being prioritized now. We are affronted by the appearance of Muslims in Sikh costumes on our streets. Our cities are more Asian than Calcutta and Pakistan. Our freedom has been eroded. This is England, and one has to be white Caucasian to be English. There are no white Chinese, white Africans, etc. No way can they be English. And again, what he's pointing about there is ethnicity. You cannot have an English man who is black, because he's a black man. He's not an English man. He might be a UK citizen, but he's not an English man. Our girls are looked down upon because they have let themselves down by the behaviour and dress. They are so obvious. It is embarrassing. And that is a great shame. And that is feminism that's to blame for that. Women all trying to outdo one another. Makeup, tattoos, body enhancements. 100 years ago, they all used to wear bonnets. All used to pretty much look the same. And they weren't competing in this way. And they all knew that they would get married, and that they would have children, and they would have grandchildren, and they would be happy. And now you look at women, and they're all trying to outdo one another, competing in the market for the male attention. But it's not so much for the male attention as to look better than the other females. And it's just left them depressed. It's left them sad, and it's left them childless as well, unfortunately. And when you see the smile on a grandmother's face with their grandchildren, that's priceless. And these feminist women that don't actually have any children, what are they going to have in their old age? What are they going to be able to think to themselves? Well, I worked very hard and I made my boss happy. But how is that going to compare to, well, I worked looking, raising up these children, and I now have grandchildren to make me happy? The boss isn't going to make them happy, is it? Our cream, who didn't return home, that's the cream of the crop, the alpha males, would say, what did I get killed or injured for? The tortures of our Jap prisoners of war. What was it for? When one looks at this country, one is ashamed of the filth of the crimes. Blair and his Scots cronies should be indicted for treason. Perhaps if I win the lottery, I would leave this country to its decomposition. My country, not theirs. You can see people are really angry about what's happened to the country, and yet they're put across today as if they were desperate to fight the Nazis and we won the war and they laid down their lives, when the truth is that a lot of them were thinking, well, did we really win the war? Did we really fight on the right side in the war? When you look at it now, and if you look at VE Day, when they celebrate all of this, it's Victory in Europe Day. It's not Victory for Europe. It's Victory in Europe. So whose victory was it in Europe? Because it certainly wasn't the European people's victory, was it? Because this hasn't just happened in Britain. It's happened all over Europe. In fact, it's happened in America as well. America used to be majority white up until, I think it was the Hart-Celler Act in the 60s, changed immigration. And that's just literally changed the face of America in the space of a few decades, the same as mass immigration has changed the face of Britain just within a few decades. But it's good that all of this was collected, and hopefully we can learn from what our elderly brothers had to say, and their wisdom from looking back at what they fought and looking today at the country today. And of course, it is much worse today. And thankfully, they're not actually going to see it that bad, but our descendants are going to see it even worse if we don't do something about it. And of course, now we have much greater communication with the internet, so we have no reason to not know that these things are going on, because that information is all there at our fingertips. And I hope that things may start to look up at some point in the future. As things get worse, more and more people wake up and more people start resisting. And that's what is most important, is that you continually resist, and the means become an end in themselves when you're doing something like that, because it's such a moral thing to do. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.